The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch.
We're back on. We're going to talk about selecting a trainer. Meredith, this hits home with me because I sent my mule to a trainer several years ago after I broke my arm because I didn't want her to have time off. And boy, was she mad about that when I got her back.
I bet she was.
Oh, yeah, she reprimanded me big time. So let's talk about it.
Okay, well, I had kind of an illumination, if you will, when I was looking at this article that I wrote back in 1986 about selecting a trainer, and I had kind of the same experience with my mule. I had sent him away to a trainer when he was 3 years old because I thought, it was the thing to do. I didn't know enough, or I didn't think I knew enough to train my mule. And everybody was sending mules to trainers back in those days.
Right.
And I felt that if I tried to do something, I might get hurt. So there was a lot of fear involved in that.
Mm.
And certainly you had that same thing going on. If you were sitting there with a broken arm, what can you do? And so you think you're doing the right thing, and everybody tells you you're doing the right thing. And so you do. But back when I sent Sundowner off for training in 1983, he went to a reining horse trainer. They didn't have mule trainers back then. You know, they had mule skinners that worked with the animals that were packing and in harness, but
right.
As far as riding was concerned, that was kind of rare. I picked a good trainer. I thought that Steve Schwarzenberger was an excellent trainer, and he was. And he was convenient because he lived right down the road from me, so I could drop in and visit my mule every so often and see how things were going. And one time I dropped in there and I asked the stall cleaner where Steve was. He said, oh, he's just running around the indoor arena. Sonny missed a flying lead change, and he's going to let him run until he's done with it, and he's not going to fight with him. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess that means I can't go in there. Another time, this was Steve's first mule, too. He trained reining horses, but this was his first mule experience. And then a few days later, I went out to the barn here at home, and up in the driveway, here comes Sundowner running up the road and into the driveway, and came running up to me, and I'm like, oh, how'd you get here? You're not supposed to be here. You're supposed to be at the barn down the road about a half a mile. Pretty soon, Steve came driving up in his truck. I go, wow, what happened? He said he decided he didn't like it there. And he left. And I was like, well, he can't do that. And Steve goes, I know, but you try to tell him that. Sonny, you have to go back. And he goes, well, are you going to bring him back? You know, can you bring him back? I don't want to have to load him up in a trailer or anything. I'm just down the road. If you want to ride him back, that'd be great. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So I did. So that's what we did. And I still thought, okay, well, I guess maybe it would be better instead of just dropping in once in a while to go see Sonny, I might learn something if I went down there when Steve was working Sonny and learned a few things from him as to how he was training my mule, the kinds of things that he was doing and why he was doing them all. I'd ask Steve when he was going to be working him, and I'd go down there and I'd learn something. And I think the biggest thing that I learned was how important it is when you actually participate in the mule's training process. In other words, if you're going to give your mule to a trainer, you need to be there. And I don't mean for some lessons, I mean for all the lessons.
Okay.
And I also mean that, you know, you got to be there even in between lessons to let your mule know you're still around.
Right.
Because when you put your mule into a trainer's facility or into a boarding stable situation. He feels like he's going to boarding school and you don't want him around anymore. My parents did that to me. 2 years they sent me to boarding school. And I just figured that they didn't like me. They didn't want me around. And I don't doubt that the animals start feeling that way, too.
Sure.
When they get off to a strange place with strange people, it feels like you don't like them anymore. That's probably why your mule was mad at you. Sonny was mad at me, too. And mules are so intelligent and so sensitive to everything that their bonding process is far deeper than what you get from a horse. Because they expect you to be their friend. You can go to a pasture, for instance, and if it's full of mules and horses, and you go up to the fence, the horses will be grazing, and they'll kind of look up at you and then put their head back down and keep eating. But a mule will look and go, oh, looky, it's a person, and they'll come trotting over to you to see you.
Right.
You know, and have a conversation with you and everything, because they're so personable. And so when you're looking to select a trainer for your mule, you got to keep these things in mind, that this is like sending your child off to school. And if you're going to send him off to a trainer, then you need to be willing to participate in the training process and learn as much as you can. That will make you more proficient at your riding skills, at your training skills, your management skills, because you're going to see all the feeding, the cleaning of the pens and the stalls and the facility, as well as all the training process, that the whole environment that you're putting your mule in. And you would be really surprised at how much you can learn from that. So when you're trying to select a trainer, the first order of business is select a trainer with a really good attitude who will let you be there. If they're going to say, oh no, your mule needs to be used to me, then you need to realize that that mule is going to bond deepest to the person who trains him. And if you're not there, then the bond is not going to be there with you.
Right.
And you're the one he comes home to. So having somebody else train your mule with the expectation that it's like tuning up a car and then getting it back. Think again. These are living, breathing animals with feelings, and they get very sensitive about how they're being treated. And if the trainer doesn't realize that, then that's not the trainer for your mule. And even though it's convenient, and even though this guy does a really good job with horses, that's not the trainer for your mule. And you got to be willing to realize that and realize this is not for your own convenience. This is a lifelong decision for you and your mule. And you're making this decision because you realize what your limitations are, that you're not a trainer, that you maybe haven't been taking riding lessons. You may have gone up in the mountains and trail riding a lot with your friends, and you ride, and you're good at staying on, but that's about it. That's not going to teach your animal how to behave, because you haven't even taught yourself how to behave. But you don't realize it.
Right.
And we listen to all these people telling us what we ought to think and what we ought to do. And, oh, your animal's misbehaving. And the biggest problem that I ran into was that people were more than willing and more than willing to give me advice out of nowhere. Oh, you need to put a tie down on that mule. Or, oh, you need this bit or that. Or, oh, you need to do this or you need to do that if he's acting up. And the general rule of thought was that the mule was misbehaving. I soon found out that that was not the case.
Sure.
I found out that I was at fault. That if my mule wasn't doing what I asked, then I wasn't asking the right way, with the right attitude, with the right equipment. And I had the attitude that he should do what I want, and that I was the boss or the leader, like all these horse trainers were telling me, and he should learn to do what I want. But eventually, with experience, and I finally did sign up for riding lessons and clinics and all of that, and that was a good experience too, was to start out by going to clinics with different trainers and just riding my mule. You know, I was a fairly proficient rider, and I couldn't really ride a balanced seat until I got with my dressage instructor, and I rode with her for 10 years. And I got better then. And when I was with her, I should back up a little bit. Before I was with her, I was doing clinics with Western trainers, and I was doing reining clinics, I was doing English Western Pleasure and those kinds of things with the basic horsemanship skills that were highlighted. And so when I found out soon that highlighting basic riding skills with my mule wasn't really teaching us both how to come together and be aware of each other's needs. And I didn't get that attitude until I got with Melinda Weatherford, that dressage instructor trainer, because she was the first one I rode with that considered the animal as well as the rider when she was doing the instruction. And she was more than willing to have me bring Sonny up there and work on our technique and everything. And this was after he'd already been trained for reining, and he was a push-button reiner and won the world championship in 1984. But after that, he didn't like it anymore. And when I wanted to do more of it, he started running off with me. That was his way of showing me that he was quite displeased with me showing off in reining. He let me know he knew what I was after there. I just wanted people to go, oh, you got a reining mule. And a lot of us in the beginning, we get caught up in those kinds of things. So we get a really pretty mule. We got one that does a lot of things that are really above our ability. And if you don't spend the time it takes to work on the ability and the way that you think about each other, and this takes time. And that's why 10 years with Melinda Weatherford was awesome, because every time she told us to do something, it was for my benefit and his. You see, she said, you have to do this the right way. And in your own body, you have to sit like this to make this happen in his body. So she was really looking at us from a physical standpoint and not from just doing different movements. We had to get a good foundation on us, on our abilities, both of us. I had to learn to be better in good posture, ride in better posture. I already walked in pretty good posture because of what my grandmother said. But when it came to sitting on my quadruped and moving with his body, he could put me off balance quite frequently. And then every time I went off balance, then he was trying to be in balance, and I would affect that, and then he'd run away with me and go, you're messing up. And I got the picture. I did. I recognized that Lindy was trying to teach from a completely different perspective than what I had been taking lessons with before. And it was kind of starting to get me to hone in on how important it was to build a good foundation in both our bodies so that we were physically capable of getting in sync with each other and having these off-balance moments a lot less frequently. And this is why I really glommed on to dressage training, not because of the fancy white stallions that could dance. I mean, that just made me dumbstruck when I saw what the stallions from the Spanish Riding School of Vienna could do. And I had seen my mules out in the field doing those movements. I thought right away, oh, yeah, I can get out there and make them do that. and get on and try it. And every time I tried to do a capriole with one of my mules, they jumped in the air and ran off with me. And eventually I figured out that they were just displeased with my forceful and show-off attitude. Then maybe I should listen to Lindy a little more carefully. So I would go back to Lindy and I'd be in a lesson and I'd go, well, you know, I'm trying to do this, but he's just not doing it for me. And I just don't know what I can do to make him do it. And she would say to me, Meredith, stop whining. You have a long way to go. And you have to build this foundation first. You can't just go on and do all of these advanced moves without the proper foundation. So just learn a little bit of patience. And then pretty soon she started showing up with a button that she wore all the time that was a circle with a slash through it. And the only word on that button was whining. And it was a reminder to me that we're changing our attitude here. So they didn't even think about talking to me about what he's not doing. Let's just focus on the things we need to focus on to get the proper physical conditioning so that we can do those fancy things that I want to do without it being showing off. We want it to be skilled and perfected between the two of us. We want to be in balance and in harmony, but we have to put the work in first. We can't just jump into these moves. And so I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about this is a much better approach. If I have to have my mule trained, it's nice to have a trainer who's willing to train us both and then go for lessons instead of just schluffing my animal off on the trainer, because Lindy took animals in training too, and she would take them for people that just wanted that level of participation. But I knew, and she even told me, you know, that people that just throw their animals with a trainer are going to experience difficulties later because they're not learning with their animals. You really have to learn with your animal.
Right.
And the important thing to remember is, particularly with mules, the selection of the trainer is of utmost importance due to his psychological makeup. I mean, you got to remember that your mule can't learn from someone he doesn't like. And mules do have their preferences. And they would rather it be a group effort because the one that they're most bonded with is you. So it just makes sense that you should both learn together. And so the other consideration is, where do you begin looking for a trainer? Well, the best place to begin for mules is probably at a mule show. And you can look at the performance classes and you can see who's winning. And you can talk to the owners. If they don't do the training themselves, they'll probably put you in touch with someone who does do the training, somebody they've used or somebody they are currently using. And so you can get these recommendations from people. And other resources for trainers are the various equine publications that are popular from your area. Trainers, as in any business, will usually post ads. If no trainers are listed as such, study the ranch ads and contact ranch owners. They should be able to help. But you got to realize that that's only going to be a generalization. Just because they're a mule trainer doesn't mean they're going to be the right one. They all have their own differences, their own preferences, and their own way of doing things. They all have their own facilities that are kept in different ways. You don't have to have a lot of money to keep a well-organized and clean facility. But there are a lot of trainers that will want you to just, okay, well, you give me your mule and I'll see what I can do in 60 to 90 days, and then you can come back and make an assessment as to whether you want to continue. That to me is a big red flag. If they want that animal by themselves and they're talking about 60 to 90 days, that sounds nice and inexpensive to you. But in my estimation, that doesn't tell me that they're going to do a thorough job with your mule. Right. That means they're trying to hide him from you, and they're hiding their techniques from you.
Yeah.
So what you may find when you go back is your mule has had a really bad experience, and now you got to fix it. You know, so that's why it's important, once that you've accumulated a few names, to go ahead and call and make appointments to visit the various trainers. The interview with the trainer is as important to you as it is to him. He has to get a feeling of who you are and what kinds of things you're expecting. What are you going to be doing with your mule? Are you just going to be trail riding, or are you going to be in shows? Do you even have an interest for shows? And if you're just a trail rider, then a lot of trainers will just go ahead and get the idea that they need to just be broke to ride, and that you don't have to pay attention to the physical development of the animal. But actually, in both cases, shows and in trail riding, it's really important how their foundation is built. Because if you get up in the mountains in the difficult terrain and they're carrying you on their back, they need to know how to do that efficiently, and their body needs to be developed to be able to even do it. With your shifting weight and you're going down a narrow up a narrow trail, and there's a 100-foot drop on one side and the trail's really narrow, you know, one misstep, you could be at the bottom of that cliff. So you want a trainer that keeps the physical development in mind and considers the importance of getting you both in sync with each other, like Lindy did. And I thought, wow, I hadn't even heard of that, you know. And I thought, right off the bat, I thought, this is novel. This is a great approach to training. This is like no other trainer I have even experienced. And that's why I ended up staying with her for 10 years.
Wow.
Because, you know, even though Sonny did some really screwy things during those 10 years,
right,
including with her, you know, I asked her, well, can you get on him and show me this?
Uh-oh.
And she only did it once. He ran off with her. He goes, what do you think you're going to do? Substitute her for you? He says, don't you think you should learn something? We got to do this together. Even Sonny knew that. You know, I wasn't buying it at the time. But Lindy got it real fast. Because the next time I asked her, oh, do you want to get on and show me this? She said, no, I don't. It's clear to me that the mule wants you to do it. And so I went, well, I can't say you're wrong. So if you are able, and which I did with Lindy, I went up there and saw the facility where we were going to be working. And it wasn't at her stable, because she had just bought some property and was in the process of building it up. But she had a friend down the road that was allowing us to use their arenas and everything. So I would just trail her up there. And then that way, Sonny could stay home and we could go to her. And we were both getting trained at the same time. And my experience with other trainers, you know, in addition to seeing their facility before you make a commitment, there were a lot of good trainers available, and you do have an opportunity to discuss finance goals and general care and stuff like that. But it's really important to look beyond the surface of what you're going to get in training, because that is what makes the financial part a good or a bad investment. If you're talking to a trainer that just wants to take your animal or is willing to have you out there to ride your animal twice a week and the rest of the time he's in turnout or confined in a stall, you can only imagine what kinds of vices your animal can get from being in containment, because mules and donkeys typically are very claustrophobic animals.
Right.
I have avoided putting them in stalls except when they're showing and there's nothing else you can do. I have always kept my animals in stalls and runs at home, so to minimize any claustrophobia, because that just, again, creates the anxiety and it interferes with your ability to bond and to learn the lessons together that you really need to learn. So there's a lot of good horse trainers available today, but they're not necessarily qualified to train mules. The horse industry is a really big business, and most of these horses that you see that are show horses have all kinds of vices, and if they have wooden barns, the walls of their barns are chewed on and lumber's being replaced all the time and all of that kind of stuff. But when you're looking for a mule trainer, that trainer needs to be a person of extraordinary patience and be well-versed in technique. And just as a precaution, you might even ask him if he's ever trained a donkey, because donkeys are the ultimate challenge. You and I both know that.
Sure.
The mule trainer must know how to appeal to the donkey half of the mule as well as the horse half of the mule to be truly successful. When you visit the trainer's facility, there's several ways to get the information that you require. Pay attention to the general condition of the facility. Is it clean, free of debris, with safe fencing? If it's got barbed wire, that's an automatic no, because that's something that anybody with equines knows, that's how to fillet a horse. So you want safe fencing. Check to see that the water and mineral salt blocks are available to the stock. Does the trainer have a good working area available to him? And if he doesn't have one at his place, is he willing to go somewhere else and rent or lease the facility there so that you have proper place to train? And in bad weather, an indoor arena is essential. If he doesn't have an indoor arena, you're going to have to plan to have your lessons with your animal on good weather days. And this is the beauty of keeping him at home and just trailering to a lesson rather than having him living with a trainer. Trainers that train like that generally have a barn full of stock. And so your animal is not going to get the attention that you think. Which brings me to another train of thought of the day way back when, is that people thought that it was really important to put miles on the animals to get them trained.
Right.
And you had to ride for a lot of hours, lots of wet saddle blankets, you would hear them say. And in the training that I've developed over the years from all these different trainers that I got some good information, some not so good information from, I have learned that, number one, routine is really important. Not just what you're teaching them, but is the routine sufficient to build their bodies in a healthy way, so that they're being built up so that they can perform the movements that you want them to perform. We even have to do that in sports. Football players need to do all kinds of different exercises in order to build their bodies up for the game, but they also realize the benefit of taking days off in between for rest and not just working yourself to death and to where you fatigue all the muscles. And you need to take these things into consideration. And any trainer that you're going to get should be able to engage in a conversation with you about these things. And they should be talking to you about how you are maintaining yourself. So when you go see a trainer at his place, check the condition of his stock. Are they well fed? Are there any obtrusive scars and bruises on the animals? And what's the condition of their feet? That is really important.
Yeah.
A good trainer will know that these guys have to be properly trimmed. And they're always telling you, oh, some will tell you every 6 to 8 weeks. Some will tell you 8 to 10 weeks. I contend from the knowledge that I've gathered that all these animals are individuals and they're all different. And the trainer that you're talking to should know that too. And he would... The answer to your farrier question, how often do you trim or shoe the animals, should be as often as they need it. And are they going to get shod as often or any way that they need it? If I'm just doing basic training on an animal, he should say, for instance, then they can have just regular shoes all the way around, and they may not get worn very fast in the beginning. But if I'm training a reiner and he's sliding on his hindquarters, we may have to change those shoes behind so that we don't cause damage to his balance and his hooves by the way that he's moving. The condition of the trainer's animals can tell you a lot about the trainer. So these are the kinds of questions that you could get into these days. Way back when I was looking for a trainer, a lot of trainers would like to hide a lot of things. They kept secrets so they could get top dollar for their training.
Right.
And I had a lot of trainers mad at me when I started giving away free information in these articles I was writing. And they said, well, what, you're going to cut into our clientele? I said, do you know how many millions of people there are in the country? Do you know how many people there are out there that can't even afford a trainer like you? What, you don't think they deserve to have this kind of information so they can fumble along and try to train their own animals and maybe at least get coaching advice from you? So I had these kinds of conversations with the trainers, and eventually the ones that were really good and really capable trainers were willing to have those discussions with me. Then when I was giving out this kind of advice like I give in this article, as a consideration to yourself, for instance, and your mule, don't be afraid to ask the trainer if he'll ride for you. Go ahead and give him your mule. Take your mule to the interview, and you know, you might want to mention the fact that you wish to see him ride at the time you make your appointment, so you give him a heads up on it. That's just polite. And the trainer can then be sure to allot the time necessary to ride for you. That's just good manners. And as he rides, watch the way he handles his animals. Are his hands light yet firm? Does he ask for collection and cause the animal to travel smoothly and fluidly? Does he ask him to over-collect? Because if you're taking the animal to a trainer, he's probably not in good physical condition, and he's probably pretty stiff. And if the trainer forces the collection, you don't want that. You want a trainer that's going to work with the level that your animal is physically. Do his animals move away from leg pressure? Have him ride one of his own. Do the animals bend through their rib cage on their circles? Or are they falling out or falling in and swapping ends? If he does a turn on the haunches, is he really using the pivot foot properly and walking with the outside foot and really placing it correctly? Or again, is he swapping ends? Is there vertical flexion? Is there impulsion? And lateral bend, which are all the elements of proper shape. And any truly good trainer will know and practice these techniques, especially now. They didn't do it so much in the old days because everybody thought that that was lips on horses in the Spanish riding school of Vienna, and that's dressage, and we don't do dressage. That's too fancy. Well, people have learned since that dressage is not too fancy. Dressage is a system of training that takes the animal through their physical development in very small steps. with very small target goals at every stage. For instance, when you're first beginning and just riding, just keeping your animal straight in line and bending through the corners of the arena is about the only thing you're going to worry about. He will learn to bend through his rib cage just by virtue of traveling through the corners properly. And you will be doing that for a long time because that's what dressage does. And you will work on those kinds of things. When you start doing a turn on the haunches or a turn on the forehand, that's a whole different level. That's after you have learned to travel straight and bend through the corners of the arena. Then you can think about turning on the haunches and on the forehand, which are a little difficult to do if you don't have control over your body and you haven't practiced very much on that very small goal of just going straight and bending through the rib cage. While you're touring the facility and watching the trainer at work, it is time for discussion. You have a chance to determine the overall character of the trainer. If he's the least bit short-tempered or gruff, he's not the trainer for your mule. If he seems patient and even-tempered, it's now time to discuss your goals and the way they will be financed and the way that they will be approached. And be realistic about your expectations. Talk about dressage training with him. Is he familiar with what that is? Or does he only have a general knowledge? If he only has a general knowledge, he's not the trainer for your mule. The one that really understands the goals and the sequence of dressage training is going to be a much better trainer for your mule because he won't push your mule too hard. Then you can work out the semantics about what you want to do with the trainer. For instance, a lot of people talk about training the mules, the basics, in 60 to 90 days. But unless you're an experienced rider, the training can't be maintained that way. Remember, training is primarily teaching the animal to respond to cues in a habitual manner, and it takes time to build good habits and a good foundation. If you don't have the finances for any more than 60 to 90 days, and you're not experienced, ask the trainer if he would be willing to spend time in the last month or so teaching you how to ride your mule correctly. Granted, this is a request that he should say yes to immediately. If he doesn't say yes, not the right trainer for you. Any good trainer would insist that you do. And when you're just doing the basic, that's all you should expect in the 60 to 90 days. Don't expect your mule to be so broke you can go to a show and do all these different things like barrel racing and pole bending and English and Western pleasure and all that. Those things take finesse. Mm-hmm. Even going trail riding in the mountains, it takes finesse. Mm-hmm. So if you do hire a trainer for 60 to 90 days, understand what that is really for. It's because you're afraid to ride your mule yourself. Yeah. And you don't think you have the ability to control him. And that 60 to 90 days is just to teach your mule the basics of walk, trot, canter, whoa, and back so that he will respond to those things when you ask him to do it. But we're not even talking about physical development at that stage, not for you or for him, because that's going to take time. It's okay to go ahead and hire a trainer to do that, but again, be careful, because if your mule feels like he's been shipped off to boarding school by himself,
yeah,
he's not going to walk, trot, canter, back, and reverse for you. He's going to be mad at you,
right.
You know? So if you're going to do this 60 to 90 day stuff, then be sure to be there every day to see him. You may not get to ride him every day because the trainer won't do that. If he's a good trainer, he won't have to. He'll only be riding him probably 2-3 times a week. When he does, he should be willing to let you get on and ride and do what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And then he should be willing to go ahead and explain to you all the cues he's using, how he's using it, how he's using his balance seat, how he's keeping contact with the barrel of the equine with his legs, not pushing his feet down in the stirrups and forward, affecting his balance seat. He has to have a balanced seat to ride correctly. And if anybody tells you different, he's not the right trainer for you. When you discuss your goals with a trainer, be concise and to the point. Don't be afraid to ask him questions and clarify the terms of the agreement so that you understand exactly what he will be doing with your mule. Ask him for a copy of the contract to take home with you so you can study it. Don't just sign it in a big hurry and go, okay, we're done. Get my mule fixed up and I want him all done 60 to 90 days and I'll come and pick him up later. That will never work like that. Although that's what we were led to believe back in the early 80s. Even I was like that. I thought, oh yeah, I'll get this mule tuned up and then I don't have to be afraid to ride him and he'll do everything I want him to do. And that's putting a lot of pressure on the trainer too, you know. They can't read your mind. And any trainer that's worth his salt is going to know that he can't make an advanced champion show horse out of a show mule out of an equine that he's only got for 60 to 90 days. Well, it takes people years to get to that level of performance. And that's part of the lessons that you learn along the way. And then as you go along, like I did with Lindy, you begin to appreciate the journey that you're taking. And that fleshes out the small victories that you're making. All of a sudden, you find yourself more secure in the saddle. You find that there is no such thing as an animal with bad gaits. There's only animals with bad balance and bad execution of those gaits. And it's only because they're not physically developed the right way. So if a trainer's telling you that, oh yeah, your mule he's just a roughing his gaits, that's an excuse. And you should recognize that, and you will, if you're patient and willing to take these things in very small steps over a long period of time. Because then you will learn these lessons, and you will say to yourself, self, this is not the trainer for me or my mule. And so also, you know, to avoid any misunderstandings, ask the trainer about the terms concerning the veterinarian, the horseshoer, hauling expenses, and any showing that you might want him to do. Like I had Steve Schwarzenberger riding Sonny in the reining competition at the World Competition in Bishop. I knew I couldn't ride it. I knew I was not competent to do that. So I asked Steve if he would be willing to ride the championships at the mule show. Quality horse show reining trainer at a mule show. I didn't even realize what I was asking him at the time. You know, to me, that was just another mule show, right. You know. But I had no idea how embarrassing that could have been for him and all his reining horse friends. At the reining horse competitions and at the AQHA Congress and all that, you know. They ribbed him pretty good, I gotta say. But again, think about what you're asking when you're talking to your trainer, but don't be afraid to ask and don't be afraid to talk to him. And any trainer, like I said, that's worth his salt will go ahead and talk to you, and you'll learn a lot. You'll both learn a lot. And in this case, Steve learned about mules and what they could do, what you didn't want them to do. I learned a lot about what goes into training a really competent performance animal. And I had to visit a lot of trainers over a lot of years to learn what I did, and I was really equally glad that I knew I couldn't remember all that stuff, so I wrote it down after every lesson, after every encounter with every trainer, with every clinician, and I rode with some of the very, very best. I rode with Al Dunning in the beginning and reining training, besides Steve Schwarzenberger. I audited Pat Pirelli's Western training. I went to John Lyons clinics and Buck Brannaman and Clinton Anderson and all of those.
Yeah.
And they were excellent trainers, and I got a lot of things out of even just going there and auditing their clinics like that, and then bringing it home and practicing these things on my mules to see what worked and what didn't. And then I got into dressage and combined training, and before that I started riding English because Western got a little bit boring. Western was really good for learning how to do flying lead changes and things like that, the things that were associated with the reining and Western riding, and even with the Gymkhana classes, and realizing that if I wanted to make a good time around barrels or through poles, my animal had to move efficiently. He had to bend through his rib cage and stay tight to the barrels, or we were going to lose time.
Mm-hmm.
He had to do flying lead changes in a split second through those poles. And the only way that he was going to be able to do that is if his whole body was balanced.
Right.
So that he didn't have to go way out away from the poles and then come back. There are so many things that you learn when you're willing to take the time to develop the ability and the skills and most of all the physical development to do what you're asking these animals to do. And there's nothing better than a really good trainer to help you do that. And it's pointless to waste your time with the ones that aren't going to give you that kind of stuff at the upper levels. But as I said before, if you just need somebody to boost your confidence and get your animal started for 60 to 90 days so you're not afraid to ride them, just very, very basic stuff, then some of those basic stuff trainers are very good for that. They don't have to be a high-end performance trainer to teach you the basics. There's a lot of people out there that are quite competent and teach a lot of beginners how to do very, very basic things. And we all start at that stage. You don't start knowing pull the right rein to go right and pull the left rein to go left when you're first starting to ride. That has to come from somebody. So I'm not discounting any of these trainers at any level because they're all suitable for people and their animals at certain levels. I would just say that be careful of taking a mule to a horse trainer.
Right.
That's probably the most important consideration.
Right.
Because even basic training issues can become really big issues. The trainer is full of himself and tries to get on a mule and force him to do something, then he's going to get a really fast ride.
There you go.
So it's really a matter of keeping yourself educated about all these things. And at first the trainers thought I was some kind of competitor with them, but I have never been that way with the trainers. I appreciate all of them the way I appreciate all of the mules and donkeys and horses and that.
Right.
I look upon them as individuals and all of the individual gifts and skills that they possess. And with the trainers, all of the different ways that they can help people to be better riders. And when you look at things that way, then it's a much more pleasant environment for everybody. And everybody doesn't feel so attacked, if you will. And they're more willing to share the information that they learn. And everybody is more willing to have a good time with each other that way. And in doing it that way, everybody learns. The animal learns. The trainer learns. The client learns. And you open up your possibilities. Like I swore when I started dressage with Lindy, I said, Lindy, I am never going to jump. I know you're into combined training, but we're not going to do that. I just want to get balanced in dressage, and I'm happy with that. And after about 3 years, I went, Lindy, I feel pretty secure in my seat now. Do you suppose I can go ahead and try a cross rail and some ground poles and stuff with Sonny? who never takes a moment that he doesn't teach me something.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
my first thorough mule teacher. 16-2 hands, which is quite intimidating. But she goes, oh, yeah, I'll let you do that. And the first time we went over the ground rails, Sonny picked up his feet very nicely. She goes, oh, he's doing that very well. And as soon as he hit the fourth pole, he dug in the hindquarters and took off.
Oh.
And she goes, I don't know if he's going to be a very good jumping mule. You know? She goes, let's try the cross rails. So we tried the cross rails, and he did the same thing. And then she asked me, she said, well, that other mule you got, maybe CT, might be a better candidate. So then my lessons turned into two lessons a week. One where Sonny and I did the dressage, and the other lesson where I did some dressage with B, and then it kind of went into combined training with ground poles and cross rails and eventually jumps. And I did the jumping part with B for 3 years. First year when we went to our first combined training event, we took eighth place. Everybody laughed at us because I was riding a mule with horses.
Uh-oh.
So they were laughing and making snide comments and all of that. But instead of getting mad about it, I learned how to be patient and went, well, you just don't know what I've been through. <You know>? Pretty soon the second year, they were watching and they told me, oh, well, you two have improved a lot. And I got second the second year. And then the third year, I got first place over 56 horses in dressage. I took the highest score. That was quite an accomplishment. And at that show, they all decided that they were going to adopt me and my mule as their mascot. So I got everybody's approval, but all the lessons that I had to learn about shelling with the horses so that my mule didn't spook their horses, and
right.
crawling ahead to the shows and warning them that I'm coming with a mule, and yeah, all these things, but this all came out of my trainer, after doing clinics with Olympic team members, like the Swedish Olympic team I rode with Major Anders Lindgren, the American Olympic team rode with Bruce Davidson, Jim Graham, Denny Emerson, and I learned so much from those people.
Right.
Because I finally got to a level where they didn't laugh at me when I came to those clinics. I'd been with Lindy for probably, oh, I'd say 7 years by that time. So we were pretty balanced, and I was riding two mules, one for the combined training and one for dressage, and I split the clinic lessons accordingly, and they were actually impressed with the improvement that we managed to make every time we saw them. And so they were of the mind that, oh yeah, mules were just for packing and they're stubborn and all of that. But by the time we got to showing them what they could really do, because they put us to the test, they were impressed too. And that opened up a lot of opportunities for other people in their mules to be able to show their mules in a lot more different things. The Western shows opened up their open classes to mules. The English people opened up their English classes to mules in the open classes. Dressage allowed mules to compete at the lower levels, the ones that weren't being qualifying point system things for the Olympic teams. These days, just a few years ago, we had our first mule make it to the Kentucky Horse Park to the dressage finals with horses.
Right.
Because this is from being not a withering flower and going ahead and going at these professionals and talking with them and being willing to carry on a conversation with them and be able to make decisions, informed decisions about what's good for you and your mule at any given time and what trainer is better for each of those levels. Because, like I said, they all have value. at all stages. Mm-hmm. They all do.
Yeah.
And you got to realize, too, your own limitations and be willing to accept it and don't be embarrassed. Everybody has to start somewhere, and everybody is going to make mistakes.
Right.
And these trainers are out there as our coaches, as an available opportunity to better ourselves and better our mules and deepen the bond that we have with them so that we can enjoy them in a lot more different ways than we ever thought we could. In all of this, following the basic guidelines I've given you today will enable you to locate the right trainer for your mule. And granted, it takes a little time to visit and discuss things, but it's time well spent. And the right trainer can produce a happy, healthy, and well-mannered mule. But more than that, he can produce a completely satisfied owner.
Oh, you bet. This is a good perspective to have when considering hiring a trainer. This is excellent. Thank you, Meredith.
Well, it is, but it also, like I said, it requires you to be patient, to be realistic about your own limitations, about what, and really take time to look into the kinds of things you would be interested in doing with your mule, not just looking at it like, I want to teach my mule to side pass. You got to realize these are upper level movements you're asking about when you say that. Yeah, it looks really cool when somebody's side passing their animal, but it's also very easy to make them do that, but mm-hmm. to make them do it correctly.
Correctly, right. Right.
If you don't take the time to do that, that can cost you a lot in vet bills.
Sure.
When you don't look upon it from a viable sportsman-like attitude, yeah, I mean, when we're young, we want to do what we want to do. We see all these people doing sports, and we want to do it. So we get out there and try it, and we get bucked off our mule and break our arm or our legs, and then we're laid up for a long time. And then we go back, and our mules are mad at us. We don't know why. But if you let yourself to grow in a more wise and patient way, the incidence of injuries like that will be greatly minimized.
Oh, yeah.
Now, because I approached my mules, I was forced to buy my mules. I mean, I either did it the way they wanted it, or I didn't get it done at all.
Right.
And I was such a wuss, man. I was really afraid that these guys were really going to hurt me.
Right.
Now, I could bully my horse, so I felt pretty confident with my horse. But, boy, when these mules started twisting things around with me, they ran off. But the odd thing about it, too, was when they ran off, they were so smooth and balanced that I could stay on for the most part. And I only fell off when we got to the end of the run.
Uh-oh.
When Sonny would put his head down. And so then I don't want to hit the ground, so I just put my arms around his neck and slid down his neck. And ended up it was all a slow motion kind of thing. So I can tell you to this day that I never broke a bone riding an equine.
Wow. Okay.
I only broke my ankle when I was doing a remodel on my house and I was bringing in a VCR for my TV. And the contractor left an extension cord right in front of the door and I tripped on it. But I have never had a bone broken by an equine. Probably because my hard head wasn't hard enough to persist. When they threatened me, I backed off. I did not want to get hurt with the equines.
Right.
All I wanted to do was ride. And if it meant being patient, I went, okay, I'll be patient. I got enough people around me, so I've got people to ask to help me. And it worked.
Good.
It worked. It was fun.
We just roped in another episode. Is it lunchtime?
Well, it's getting that way. I might as well put the lead in, though, too, and tell you a little bit about what we're going to hit next.
Oh,
because
yeah,
it kind of falls into this. When you take the time to find a good trainer and somebody who is willing to work with you to this extent, you do learn a lot. And down the road, you're going to find yourself quite competent to train your own mule going forward. So that's what we're going to talk about, is training your own mule the next time. Wow. Because if you've had selected the right trainer and the right people to help you, and you've gotten competent and everything, there is no reason in the world why you can't train your own mule and save yourself those training dollars.
Right.
And use some of those training dollars for building up your facility.
Sure.
And then maybe you can even bring in more training dollars by training other people's animals.
Oh, yeah. And video your rides.
Yeah. And chronicle all the experiences that you've had in a diary. Put them into articles.
Oh, yeah.
You know, go ahead and submit them to magazines to help others to go down the same path that you've been down. That will only help build our industry.
Oh, yes, you bet.
Now I can think about lunch.
You're too funny. Okay, Meredith, oh, this is awesome. You have a good one, and we will talk soon.
Sounds great, Cindy.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566. And I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.